Today's share is sponsored by Daniel Aaron in memory of his father, Elliot Aaron, Yitzchak Ben Shaul, and her foolish friend for Mordechai Yosef Ben Brandon.
Okay. Drop the Pasuk base. We'll see. We may pick up the pace a little bit today, but I'm not guaranteeing to maintain this breakneck speed every single week. And the so we had in the first Pasuk, David was old, and although he was covered with garments, with clothing, it didn't help. He was constantly cold. So now he's getting medical advice. He went to the top medical specialists of his day, and they had a solution for him. Vayomer lo avadav, his servant said to him, Yivakshu la'adoni ha-melech nara besula. Let us search for the king for a nara besula, a young woman who is a besula. Va'amda lifnei ha-melech, she will stand before the king. U'sehi lo sochenes, and she will be a sochenes for him. We'll leave that untranslated for the time being because there are a number of different views as to what that means. The shachva b'chekecha, and she will sleep in his lap. The cham la'adoni hamelach, and the king will be warm. And the explanation given is that clothing does not generate heat, right? Clothing only preserves heat, keeps the body heat from escaping. And apparently David HaMelech was unable to generate body heat to keep him warm. So the solution was to find this Nara Basula who would generate the body heat. Why a Nara Basula? So the Mefarshim explained that Nara woman generates more heat than a man, and a Basula generates more heat than a Ba'ula, and therefore it was necessary to find a Nara Basula. Before we get into the specifics of the Pasuk, there's a couple of general issues to be addressed. First of all, this pasuk is a little bit reminiscent of the pasuk that we find in Megillas Esther, when Achashverosh was looking for a queen. So Yivakshu HaMelech, Nara Besula, and they Yafkei HaMelech Pekidim B'chol Eretz, but they were also searching. Now, if you were to, on its surface, try to figure out which would be a more popular contest, one would have to think to be the queen for Achashverosh. First of all, Achashverosh, basically the job available, the job description was queen, was Malka, the queen of the country. This position was not going to be a queen, it was going to be a Sochenes. David HaMelech never married her. It was actually, in a certain sense, a rather menial, perhaps one might even consider it somewhat degrading, job. Yet, the Gemara points out that Achashverosh, in order to find these women, had to appoint officers, and they literally had to go and drag people out of houses. People were not volunteering. By David HaMelech, and we'll see some of the Ramazim in the Psukim, that by David HaMelech, people were volunteering, and it was no problem to find the volunteers. So, first of all, the obvious reason is that the Achashverosh's job may have been a lot better than this one, but it came along with Achashverosh. David HaMelech's job came along with David HaMelech. That is obviously a very large part of the explanation. Mefarshim add to that that the way it was done was very different. By Achashverosh, the women were taken, and Achashverosh would have relations with them, and then he would decide whether he wanted them or not. So granted, if you were the winner, you end up as the queen of 127 Medinos. But otherwise, you're being treated in a degrading and a mystic way. By David HaMelech, one person is selected. We will see, the Psukim point out that certain pains were taken to spare the feelings of the losers. That even in David HaMelech's request, there was more than one applicant for the job. And, you know, when you apply for a job and you don't get it, it's not a pleasant experience. How steps were taken even to minimize that. So it was done with kavod, with seichel, and so on, and therefore people wanted, to participate. Secondly, and this the Gemara discusses, is that one would think if David HaMelech needed such a woman, the most logical thing to do would be to marry her. Not only that, in the time of David HaMelech, they instituted a gezerah, which was at that time a new gezerah, which was Isser Yichud al HaPnuya. According to most Rishonim, to be miyached, to be alone together in a secluded place with a married woman, is an Isser Daraisa. But to be alone with an unmarried woman is an Isser Darabanan, and that Isser Darabanan was instituted during the time of David HaMelech. Now we know, it doesn't take much to figure out, that when a takana is new, it is perhaps not as strong and not as strongly embedded within the minds of the people. Something that we've been doing for generations, you know, becomes very firmly entrenched. I always strikes me, a comment, you have little young children are learning the concept of Shabbos. And it takes them certainly a while to grasp what Shabbos is all about, but the first thing they know is muktzah. They think everything you're not allowed to do on Shabbos is muktzah. You can't turn on the light because it's muktzah. Right? The concept of melecha Shabbos is a much more sophisticated concept that comes at an older age. For little children, they know muktzah. But muktzah is the Rabbanan. It is not the ikar of Shabbos. I'm not downplaying muktzah, please. But the fact of the matter is, when a din d'rabbanan becomes firmly entrenched over generations and generations, for all intents and purposes, we don't view it any differently as a d'raisa. But if it's something new, you can imagine it was a little bit shakier. Gemara says that the Sanhedrin was ready to be matir the Isser Yichud for David HaMelech, because he needed it for refuah, rather than to be matir for David HaMelech to divorce his wife. What does this mean? A king has a mitzvah, he's not allowed to have too many wives. Merely 18. So that's his limit. David HaMelech had 18 wives. In order to marry Avishag HaShunamis, he would have had to divorce one of his previous wives. So the Gemara says, you see what a terrible thing it is if a person has to divorce his wife. Therefore, they would rather be matir the Isser Yichud, which was a risk. If David HaMelech violates the Isser Yichud, okay, there are reasons, refuah, but you can imagine that they were taking a certain element of risk on the whole takana, rather than to allow him to divorce one of his wives. Parenthetically, there's really a serious halachic problem with this. And different mefarshim discuss it. The Marsha and the Gemara gives, I think, perhaps the simplest and answer. There is a Gemara that states that, you know, the Isser of Arayas is Yehari Val Yavar. A person is rather to die, give up his life, rather than violate Arayas. It doesn't apply to Gilui Arayas alone. It applies even to offshoots, or even to peripheral things. And for example, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that there was a case of a man who was deathly ill, and the doctor said the only way he could recover is because he had this tremendous desire for a woman, and the only way he could recover is to have relations with that woman. Chachamim said, it's too bad, he'll have to die. I said, okay, maybe not to have relations, but to have her parade before him. No, he has to die. Then the Gemara says, okay, let him at least talk to her from behind the mechitza. He said, no, let him die. So why didn't they say the same thing to David HaMelech? You have a problem. You can't divorce your wives. So he wasn't even going to die. He's just going to be cold. So be cold. Why were they matirin? And the Marsha explains that there's a very fundamental difference between David HaMelech's case and that case. In that case in the Gemara, the reason why he wanted to talk to that woman or other various other steps was to derive a certain a sexual hana. That was the purpose, because he was obsessed with her, and the way to sort of relieve that obsession is to sort of grant some aspect of it. So the intent was lahana also. He needed the hana to save his life. So hana of Arayas is Avizrayah d'Arayas and Yehari Val Yavar. But David HaMelech wasn't interested in the Hanah of Arias, he was interested in something completely different. It was a high-tech hot water bottle. It was a whole different function. Even though obviously the Isser was made because it could lead to Arias, but it was a different intent. And David HaMelech, in fact, made sure that it did not get anything beyond it. This doesn't mean that we could be matched to these kinds of things on our own, you know. They say, don't try this at home. But the heter was fundamentally based on the fact that this is not of Israel d'Arayis, it is just a violation of the Takana d'Rabbanan, and that they were matter l'refuah. So let's take a look at the pasuk in detail. Vayomer lo avadav, so the servant said, Yevakshu l'adoni hamelech nara besula, let us seek for the king a nara besula. Now what is interesting to note is in pasuk beis, where the suggestion is made, it says, let us look for a nara besula. In pasuk gimel, when the suggestion is carried out, it says, Vayivakshu nara yafa. They look for a beautiful girl. So, Besula is not mentioned, Yafa is mentioned. Mefarshim explained that there were really two requirements. That would be a Besula and Yafa. And again, the theory is that in both cases it would do the job better. Besula is warmer, generates more heat than a Beula, and a Yafa generates more heat than a non-Yafa. That was the reasoning for this request. So that was the rationale behind it. Then why doesn't the pasuk say Yivak Shalmech Nara Besula Yafa? So the Kli Yakar, which is, by the way, not the same Kli Yakar as on the Chumash, but the early Achron, he suggests that this was part of the tactics to spare the feelings of those who are not selected. If you were to announce that you're looking for a Nara Yafa Besula, and people apply, and then somebody is selected, and the others are rejected, so you're telling them, you're not so Yafa, you're not so pretty. That's a tough blow for a woman. So they didn't mention that we're looking for Nara Besula. Who knows why one was selected and one was not? So this was one of the tactics that was used to spare the feelings of those who would not win, so to speak, the position. So it was done carefully, b'midos, to spare the feelings of the potential losers. So the public announcement is, but when they actually selected, the people in charge knew that they were also looking for another requirement. All right. It says, she should stand before the king, and she should be a sochenes. So this is an unusual word, and the Mefarshim struggle with the shoresh, what it comes from, what it means, and there are several different interpretations in the Rishonim. Some say sochenes means a helper. The Targum actually translates it that way. And others say, it's not the Targum, that is Rashi, I believe. Let's see who's who. No. So I don't have straight who's who. Oh, it's Mitsudas. Mitsudas translates it. Now, Mechamenes means a warmer. I don't remember who says he was a helper. But okay, some say it's a warmer. That's Rashi in the Mitsudas. Others say it's a helper. I don't remember who that is. I didn't write it down. And the third possibility is, so this is the Targum, that it should be close to the king, Kariva. And the Rabag has a fourth interpretation, so does the Radak, that Sochenes comes from the Lashon Mischan, which is storage or warehouse, supplies, and it means that she be put in charge of the king's supplies. Somebody has to take inventory in the king's palace to see what's needed. Right? If you need more towels, more linens, all the various different things that are necessary to maintain a palace. She should be given this job. This was part of the suggestion. Why? So the Rabag explains that the Sochenes, the person in charge of inventory of palace supplies, has a legitimate reason to enter every single room of the palace, including the king's private bedroom. Right? She's obligated to go in and check out and see what's needed. So this is, so to speak, a cover story. Since this whole episode is somewhat embarrassing, so you want to provide a certain cover. And Rabbah goes actually to a certain length in explaining this and says one of the lessons that we learn, the Rabbah's structure, by the way, when he explains it, he says a perish on the psukim. At the end of every segment, wherever he breaks it off, he gives you a list of to'alios, of lessons that we learn, in light with what we said originally, that everything that's in Tanakh is there to teach us a lesson. So he says the lesson we learn from there is that when a person has to do something that's embarrassing, he should take steps to reduce that busha. Because the feeling of embarrassment is really a very proper feeling. Kal Yisrael is identified by certain basic character traits. And one of them is Baishanim. We have a sense of busha, of embarrassment, of shame. In modern society, that's almost a foreign concept. Society has done so much to break down the barriers of busha that if a person is embarrassed, we look at it as a weakness. But if you stop to think about it, what is embarrassment? Embarrassment is a realization that perhaps something I'm doing is not up to my dignified standards. It's not up to the level that I really should be doing. Maybe I have reasons, as in this case. Sometimes you don't have reasons. One of the greatest barriers to chet, to sin in general, is a sense of busha. If a person feels embarrassed doing something that isn't lefi his madreg, isn't lefi his kavod, it will stop him from doing many things wrong. Now, as in any midah, an extreme can be bad, can be unhealthy. Now, suppose you have to do something that generates a certain busha, and you just go ahead and do it. Sail along, and you do what you have to do. And people think that's strength of character, and you've got to do what's right, and it's true. But at the same time, you're trampling on a midah tova. So you've got to do something. You've got to try to minimize it. You've got to try to protect it. The Beis Yosem is brought down in Mishnah Berurah, the Halacha L'Maaseh, says that if you're in a situation where people make fun of you or look down on you because you're doing a mitzvah, right? You know, a person certainly sees that you interact with the secular world. People make fun of you, you're doing a mitzvah. Sometimes, unfortunately, it happens even in the Jewish world. So, there's a certain tendency to be embarrassed. There's a busha, and you don't want to do it. Right? A peer pressure, external pressure. So you have to be miskaber. That's what it means when it says, have a az kanemer. You should have the chutzpah of a nemer to serve Hashem. You have to act with a certain lack of busha. I'm sorry, I'm going to do it anyway. Says the Beis Yosef, Afal Pikein lo tinhag ba ba'azus. Don't behave in the manner of azus and say, forget about you. You know, I'm going to do it anyway. Maybe you start making fun of the other person, reacting with a toughness, because then you're trampling on your midah busha. You should feel embarrassed and do it anyway. The exception is where you have to influence others. Right? If this person who's making fun of you is making fun of other people too, and you're strong enough to do the mitzvah anyway, but the other guys are not, so you may have to stand up and lace into the other guy to help the others. But that's because you need to help other people. But where that's not a situation, where that's not the case, then you do what you have to do, but don't trample on the midah of busha. This lesson is demonstrated by this Rabbah in a wonderful way. Because if you stop to think about it, okay, very nice idea. You're doing something, there's a certain embarrassment associated with it, so you've got to minimize that embarrassment. Put her in charge of the supplies. Does it help? First of all, we just said there was a contest, so to speak, or an investigation, a job search throughout the land to find a person for this job. So people knew. It was probably public knowledge. So everybody knew, certainly everybody in the palace knew why she was there. Secondly, a sochenes does have the right and the obligation to go into the king's bedroom. How often and when? Maybe once a week? You know, in the middle of the day while the king is out receiving visitors? You don't go into the bedroom while the king is there. You don't stay there 24/7. So the whole idea of appointing her as a tochenet in charge of supplies is a very flimsy cover. It's a cover that fools nobody. Everyone knew why she was there, and it doesn't really justify what she's doing. But the idea, I think, is even though it doesn't work, it still helps maintain this. I've done something. I tried. That is a little something. It's giving vent to the feeling of busha rather than stifling it. And therefore, it reduces the amount that we are desensitizing ourselves to that midah. In a similar way, I would explain the Chazal. There is a Gemara that tells us that in the time of Yoshua, Yoshua proclaimed a cherem at anybody who takes anything from the city of Yericho. The first city they conquered the Derech Neis. He made it like a truma, like a bikurim. Nobody should take anything. And Achan was Moel. He took stuff. And as a result of that, they lost their next battle. And Yeshua comes crying to Kadosh Baruch Hu. He didn't know why they lost the battle. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says, what are you talking about? Somebody was mauling the cherem, and that's why you lost the battle. And you have to do something about it. So Yeshua said, who is it? In the pasuk we don't find it. In the pasuk we find that they cast lots. They took a goral to try to find out who it was. Why do you take a goral? So the Gemara tells us, he asked the Kadosh Baruch Hu the obvious question. Kadosh Baruch Hu says to him, you have to find out who did it, and you have to bring him to justice. So he asked, who is it? So Kadosh Baruch Hu said, the Chidi Leturia Anilach. What am I, your informant? Go and throw a goro. So ask yourself the question. If you throw a goro, Kadosh Baruch Hu is not the informant. How else do you find out? Right? And they said they did the goro several times. And it came out on Achan each time. And Achan challenged the goro. Achan said, if we put a goro with you and me, or you and somebody else, somebody's name is going to come up. And the goro isn't conclusive. Although they did the goro several times, it came up on the same person. But he was challenging it. Because Baruch Hu would have said it outright, you wouldn't have had to deal with that. But the pshat is, it's true what Kadosh Baruch Hu is telling you. But if I could tell you through the device of a goro, I'm showing my sensitivity to Lashon Hara. I don't like to tell Lashon Hara. It's a toeles, I have to tell you, so I'll tell you. But if I could tell you in an indirect manner, it's giving vent, kivayocho, so to speak, to our Kadosh Baruch Hu's feelings of disgust and repulsion at Lashon Hara. So even where your device doesn't really quite work, but if there's some meaning to it, it demonstrates, it acts upon your feelings, your sensitivities, and protects them from getting desensitized and trampled upon. So this is the reason, according to the Ra'bag, why she was appointed as a Sochenes. Pasuk continues, Pasuk Gimel. Vayivakshu nara yafa b'chol givul Yisrael. So they searched for a nara yafa in all the boundaries of Yisrael. So again, we see how it worked. Different than Achashverosh, as we mentioned before. Achashverosh, they took them all. So they would look for the nara, but since everyone was brought to the palace. But here, they searched, and only one was brought to the palace. So you weren't, so to speak, brought in and then rejected and then cast aside. And you certainly, nothing happened to the person in between. So again, it was done derech kavod and with dignity, and that's why people participated. Vayimtzu et Avishag HaShunamis, they found Avishag HaShunamis, vayivo osa lamelech, and she was brought to the king. Vahanara yofa ad ma'od, the girl was very beautiful. Vatihi lamelech sochenes, and she became a tochenes. Again, the various interpretations for the king. Vatisharseo, and she served him. Vamelech lo yida'a, and the king did not know her, which means did not have relations with her. The Gemara points out that this is a demonstration of the godless of David, and some of the Farshim say it was really a kapara, in a sense, for David's main soul, perhaps chait, his downfall with Bathsheba, which he had a desire for Bathsheba, and he did inappropriate things to obtain her. And here he had access to Avishag HaShunamis and he didn't touch her. It's interesting Gemara, the way the Gemara puts it. The Gemara said that Avishag HaShunamis asked David to marry her. She said, listen, if I'm going to be in this role, why don't you marry me? And he said, because I have 18 wives, you know, Sanhedrin Paskin, I shouldn't divorce one of my wives. So she responded, I don't have the exact lesson of Gemara, but a rough translation is, when there's nothing to steal, a ganav also becomes honest. Right? Meaning, David's acting like such a tzaddik, you know, he's not going to divorce his wives, he's not going to have relations with Avishai or Shunamis, because he's an old man, and he doesn't have it anymore, he doesn't have any koach, he doesn't have any taiva. So now, he's acting like a tzaddik, Sanhedrin Paskin, you know, I'm not supposed to divorce the wife. So the Gemara goes on to say that he called in his wife, that David HaMelech still had full powers. And the reason he didn't have relations with her is not because he was unable, not because he didn't have taiva, but because he didn't do it, he controlled himself. So, I'm not addressing the issue of how she spoke that way in the first place. It could be it was an inyan of talchacha, that Avishag HaShunamis felt or suspected that David was being, you know, boastful perhaps, or acting a certain tzidkus that he didn't have, and it was a derech talchacha. But the Gemara is making the point that it was the tzidkus of David that was being demonstrated in this pasuk. The Kli Yakar has a very interesting explanation. How does the Gemara know that? This whole discussion is not recorded in the pasuk. How do we know that it was the tzidkus of David? Maybe David was an old man and was unable to do it. So he says there are two diukim in this pasuk that support the Gemara's conclusion. First of all, he says this pasuk is redundant. Why? Well, I guess you might call it three diukim, but two similar and one a little different. That this whole pasuk is redundant. It already says in pasuk Gimel, "Vayivak shenara yafa, vayimtu es Avishag HaShunamis." So obviously, Avishag HaShunamis was a beautiful girl, and they found her and they brought her in. Then the pasuk says, "Vatehi lo l'sochenes." We know Vatehi lo l'sochenes. That's what it said. They were looking for somebody who will be a sochenes. So why was it necessary for the pasuk to repeat these facts when they were already demonstrated before? The pasuk only needed to say, so there is a redundancy here. We're repeating that she was Yafa. She's repeating that she was a Sochanes. A second diuk he says is, why is the word Vahamelech repeated? Vahamelech lo yada. So he goes on to explain that the reason why it's repeated is to demonstrate the self-control of David HaMelech. We're emphasizing the fact that she was Yafa, she was very beautiful, so it took a lot of self-control not to approach her. And secondly, that Fatilo Sochenes, she was there all the time, whether it's a helper or the inventor or whatever the various interpretations, he had access. And so she was there, she was beautiful, he had access to her. The Hamelech, Melech is an expression that indicates power and strength. He was still a king. He still had the power to do it if he wanted to. But lo yada, he didn't do it because he chose not to, because he felt it was improper since she wasn't his wife, and since he wasn't allowed to divorce any of his wives, he already had the 18 wives. Therefore, he didn't have relations with her. So this pasuk is demonstrating, is being miramez to the interpretation that's brought down in the Gemara. The next segment of the perek deals with the rebellion of Adon Yahu. And in order to properly understand the rebellion, we need to analyze a little bit what type of person was Adon Yahu. If you read, this is by the way a common problem in Tanakh, if you read the Psukim without understanding the nuances, without Chazal, without the Mefarshim, you get a totally distorted picture of what's going on. And that's why the Bible stories never come out quite right. You look at this story, it says Adon Yahu ben Chagis, he was proclaiming himself to be a king, he was rebelling, and you know, the father never disciplined him in his life, and he ended up, you know, going down the tubes, and from here Chazal even say, we learned that if you don't discipline your child, they get messed up. And, you know, he tried to rebel. You go through the whole story. Even when his rebellion was quelled, he tried to do it again later. That's what did him in. Because for this first rebellion, Shlomo was ready to forgive him. When he tried a second time, then Shlomo had him executed. But this, what's with Adoniyahu? Fact of the matter is, that's a very distorted view of what's going on. The first thing we need to realize was Adoniyahu was an outstanding candidate to be king. And he had a very, very powerful argument. And in fact, if not for the nevuah of Natan HaNavi and the promise of David HaMelech, really Adoniyahu would have been king. And this is something, by the way, that Adoniyahu himself said to Bathsheba later. Now, it's one thing for Adoniyahu to believe that. But later, when he was maneuvering and trying to get to marry Avishag HaShunamis to try to stake a claim to the kingdom again, he went to Bathsheba. And he wanted Bathsheba, the mother of Shlomo, to intercede on his behalf. Now, whatever else you might say about Adoniyahu, it's hard to believe that he was stupid. So if he came to Bathsheba with a taina, it had to be a taina, not that he believed, but that he believed that Bathsheba would believe. So what did he say to Bathsheba? He said, you know, I really deserve to be king. Everybody expected me to be king. And I am roi to be, Einei kol Yisrael alai. They all anticipated me to be the king, not Shlomo. But, listen, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decreed that Shlomo is the king. So the least you could do for me is this. That's the way you talk to the mother of Shlomo? Doesn't the mother of Shlomo think that Shlomo is more roi to be the king? So Adoniyahu understood and knew that Bathsheba would accept that argument because it was true. Everybody who didn't know about the Nevuah and about the promise did expect Adoniyahu to be the king. Let's analyze a bit Adoniyahu. The pasuk will tell us, and we'll get into it in more detail when we get into the specifics, that one of the factors in Adoniyahu's rebellion was the fact that David HaMelech never disciplined him. Lo atzavo David abi miyama. He never got him upset. So what do you think that means? He says, I don't know how many psychologists we have here in the audience, but I'm sure we have a number of people who never studied psychology. Is there anybody in this room who doesn't know that you have to discipline a child? And David didn't know that. So you say, okay, listen, a lot of people know you have to discipline them, but somehow they don't do it. They can't bring themselves to do it, whatever it is, the very psychological factors that play in it. Chazal tells us David HaMelech used to literally beat up Shlomo HaMelech on a regular basis. And Shlomo talks about that. In fact, Shlomo HaMelech said, if only David would have done to Adoniyahu what he did to me, Adoniyahu never would have rebelled. So why did David pick on Shlomo and not pick on Adoniyahu? Now usually, you know, I having experience, you know, teaching especially high school classes, you never find the guy who's being punished saying, how come you're picking on the other guy and you're not punishing him? Right, you're picking on me. So what is it? That David, you know, didn't love Shlomo? He loved Shlomo. What happened to Adoniyahu? What's going on? Clearly, the reason why David did not discipline Adoniyahu is because he felt he didn't need it. Adoniyahu was such a wonderful child. Adoniyahu did much better than Shlomo HaMelech did, at least as a child. And therefore, why do I need to yell at him? Why? He wants to do the right thing. He always does the right thing. A simple suggestion is enough. I certainly don't need to hit him or beat him. Does something else. You know, Adoniyahu, why don't you consider praying? Oh, thank you, David. From now on, I'm not going to do it anymore. The kid was a goody-goody. He was a model student. Say, Chazal, I got news for you. Even when you have a child who seems to be doing so well, and it seems to you that it's sufficient to give a gentle suggestion, sometimes you've got to get him upset. If you never get him upset, he never really understands the meaning of no. It's an interesting thing the Bali Musar teach us, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter talks about this at great length, that you could have a person who looks like a tzaddik and has no shaychus to being a tzaddik. Why? Because people sometimes are born, everyone's born with certain character traits. You meet people that by nature, for example, they have a terrible temper. And it's difficult for them to control their temper. You meet other people that are very relaxed. They don't get angry. Not because they're a tzaddik, because they're born that way. That's their personality. They're very calm. They're chilled out, as we say today. Nothing bothers them. And so on with all kinds of midos. Usually people have a package, a mixture. Some good midos, some bad midos. And you got to work with the mix that a Kodesh Baruch gives you. Every so often you get somebody who has a very good package. And it got a lot of naturally good midos. That doesn't make you a tzaddik. What a tzaddik is to take what you have and make it better. No matter how good your package is, there's always weaknesses. What a tzaddik does is he works on overcoming those weaknesses and therefore can face nishyonos and challenges of life. But a person who just goes with the flow, if his natural flow happens to be good, most of the time he's going to be good. But when he meets the nishyon that hits on his weakness, he's going to fall apart. And he gives an example in Navi of Shevna HaSofer. Shevna HaSofer was the Sofer of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, was the Av Sanhedrin. You can imagine the time of Chizkiyahu was the time of Talmud Torah, Batku Midon Vad Be'Sheva, that everyone was involved in learning, and he was the head of the Sanhedrin. So he must have been unbelievable. And he became a traitor, and he became a chote, because he had certain weaknesses which he never worked on. And when the proper nisoyon, or improper, whatever you want to call it, but when the nisoyon came up, he collapsed, he fell apart. Says, that was Adoniyahu. Says, Adoniyahu was a terrific person. He had certain weaknesses, but since David HaMelech thought they were so minor, his weaknesses were so simple, he spoke to him gently, he never really criticized him, he never really disciplined him, never made him upset. And this was a factor, and we'll discuss in great detail how that factor worked, in Adoniyahu's ultimate downfall. But Adoniyahu was terrific. Furthermore, we find that Adoniyahu had some followers. One of his followers was Yoav. One of his followers was Evyasser, who was the Kohen Gadol. Now it is true, and the Mefarshim will explain, they both had ulterior motives, the reasons why they followed him. But we shouldn't think for a moment that this was a conspiracy, where Yoav, for example, knew that David HaMelech was angry at him, and he suspected that perhaps he'll have to pay the price when Shlomo takes over. But Yoav is a person about who Chazal say, since when Yoav died, it says they buried him bebeso ba midbar, in his house in the desert. The Gemara says people don't have houses in the desert. So what does it mean beso ba midbar? There are three explanations. One explanation was his house was like a midbar. Just like a midbar is hefker, anybody can go there. His house was hefker, anybody could come in. All the aniyim of Yerushalayim were invited into his house. There was constantly people coming to his house, putting up strangers, putting up guests, helping people. This was Yoav. Another explanation is that when Yoav died, Klal Yisrael was like a midbar. The loss was so devastating that they felt they're in the desert. This despite the fact that there were other great people around. But Yoav was such an overwhelming and powerful force. Another explanation was that it was Bamidbar, just like in the Midbar there is no dishonest money, so too in Yoav there was no, even though he was a general, powerful person, he was scrupulous in his honesty. Yoav was a great person. It is not likely, it is really incomprehensible that Yoav, regardless of his personal situation, would have followed Adoniyahu to be the king unless there was a rationale, unless there was a svara why Adoniyahu should be a king. And Yoav must have rationalized that since Adoniyahu was so much better qualified for the job, after all, Shlomo was only 12 or 13 years old at the time, perhaps Adoniyahu should be king, even though he knew there was a prophecy that Shlomo would be king. Maybe that'll be later. Maybe Adoniyahu will be the king for many years, and Shlomo is 18 years younger than him. I think they made a cheshbon because at least 18 years, because Adoniyahu was born in Hebron. So you go through the Cheshbon, there's a nice age gap. So true, there was a Nevuah that Shlomo be king. It doesn't necessarily say that he's going to be king immediately upon the death of David. So maybe Daniel should be king first. Yov must have had a rationalization. He must have felt that Daniel was ready to be king. And similarly with Avyasa, we don't have all those tsiurim by Avyasa, but he was the Kohen Gadol. He must have been, you know, this was not, you know, the Tkufa, the Bayis Sheni, where people, you know, were able to bribe the foreign authorities to become the Kohen Gadol. He was appointed by Sanhedrin. So it would appear that Adoniyahu really had a very good case. And Adoniyahu, you know, was really quite well qualified for the job. So it's much more understandable why Adoniyahu would proclaim himself king. And it's quite likely that he also rationalized, and perhaps that's what he thought. He thought he should be the king before Shlomo, or perhaps he thought that this Nevuah was contingent on Shlomo being Roy, being, he sees it, you know, I'm more qualified than he is. And therefore, he went ahead with his rebellion. But this was not like, you know, you have in the Roman Empire, you know, all these different, you know, intrigues and lowlifes and power-hungry people who are trying to take over the throne. So Daniel had a very legitimate case. He was actually well qualified. Perhaps, in certain ways, it would appear that he was more qualified than Shlomo. In fact, I saw one of the Mepharshim suggest that it could very well be that had Adoniyahu been king, the Maluchu would not have split. Because Adoniyahu was more, you know, Shlomo was a little too heavy-handed, maybe because he was young, and created certain resentments, although they didn't manifest itself so much in the life of Shlomo, but they did in the next generation. Who knows, perhaps Adoniyahu was more skilled. But maybe he wouldn't have built the same Beis HaMikdash that Shlomo Melech built. Maybe he wouldn't have written the same Shir HaShirim and the same Mishlei and the same Koheles that Shlomo HaMelech wrote. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows how to weigh these factors. But in the eyes, in the human eyes, it could be very likely that, and that's why Adoniyahu had such a following, that he had the skills, and looked to the people, that he had the skills and the experience, etc., that was needed to be a king more than Shlomo HaMelech. But this wasn't a democracy. Kadosh Baruch Hu was calling the shots. And as the Pasuk says, Adam Yirelei Naim Velakim Yirelei Levav. People look with their eyes, Hashem sees in your heart. And on the surface it would appear, and it did appear, and it was correct, that if you would have looked at if they would have had a panel of judges select who was more qualified to be king, at least at that point they would have selected Adoniyahu and not Shlomo. But Kadosh Baruch Hu is Yirelei Levav, perhaps David HaMelech realized it too, knew that it was different. Shlomo was really the one who was supposed to be king. He was supposed to be king right away. Okay. So I did keep my promise. We did more Pesukim today than last time. We'll see about next time. I don't know.